a regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Thank you for tuning into another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. We're going to talk about Michael Bloomberg dipping his toes in the presidential waters in just a minute or two. Looks like he is getting a little bit more serious about potentially running for president. But our big story today, the release of a report by the Secret Service, actually the Secret Service's National Threat Assessment Center, which took a look at 41 active assailant attacks on school grounds between 2002 and 2017, and has come up with some facts that are definitely worth noting, as well as some recommendations. Now, with the release of this report, there were several parents whose children were murdered at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, who were present and who were actually taking part in some of the training that's being conducted for law enforcement as well as for educators. Ryan Petty's daughter, Elena, was murdered at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. And Ryan actually stepped out of that training that's taking place in Washington, D.C. today to join me to talk about the findings of this report and where we go from here. Take a look and a listen. Ryan, it is so good talking with you today. Thank you so much for taking a couple minutes out of what I'm sure is a very busy day to talk about this new report from the Secret Service and the National Threat Assessment Center. What is your big takeaway from what the Secret Service has told us when it you know, has investigated and examined these active assailant attacks at schools?
Well, Cam, it's good to talk with you, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to share my thoughts on it. Three big takeaways for me. One, this is brand new research looking at school attacks from like 2002 to 2017. One interesting note that I think your listeners will understand is, you know, the deadliest attack there was actually a knife attack. And I thought that was, I think 17 were injured in a knife attack. You know, the focus is always so much on the weapon, and typically that's firearms, but really these attacks, you know, almost half of them were perpetrated with a weapon other than a firearm. And I think that was an important insight that I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is that none of these attacks were stopped by law enforcement responding from off campus. None of them. These attacks lasted approximately 1 to 2 minutes. That is not enough time for law enforcement to get there.
Yeah.
The importance of having in the importance of preventing these attacks, I think, cannot be understated. You have to stop these before they start, because response, it's just too late. And we saw that in my own case with my daughter, my daughter's murder at Marjory Stoneman Douglas. The killing was over before anyone from off campus could really have done anything about it. So prevention is really important, and having you know, law enforcement and you know, having a school resource officer, mm-hmm. or like we've done in the state of Florida, we have armed guardians on the campus that can respond in less than a minute and stop the killing once it started. That's a second thing that you know really stood out to me from this report. And the third thing, Cam, is and this is new. Secret Service also looked at the home life of these attackers, and many of them were suffering from a really terrible home life, multiple traumas at home, either you know with you know. Parents that had separated, or they were living with relatives, or they were abused as kids themselves, and they were bringing that into the schools, and we're asking our schools to sort of deal with those problems that these kids are bringing, you know, from the home. And I thought that was that's brand new. That's the first time I'd ever seen that published in any research. But I think the impact of the breakup of families in our nation is we're starting to see some effects of that in these attacks on our on our school.
You know, I think that you're right about that. And, you know, I know that the Secret Service didn't get into things like armed school staff or the Guardian program. This was about the data and what they had collected. But going back to what you had just talked about a moment ago, I think that one of the big takeaways for hopefully everybody reading this report is, as you say, the time that it takes for these attacks to start and conclude is such a short amount of time that you really do need that first line of defense, whether it's a school resource officer, whether it's a guardian, or perhaps even both. In certain circumstances, that seems to me to be a very clear takeaway from this report, that there needs to be that immediate response when one of these attacks occur. But again, one of those other big takeaways is that these attacks, by and large, are preventable. Correct?
Almost every case. There were 41 attacks studied. We couldn't find one of them that wasn't preventable. There were disturbing behaviors displayed by all of these attackers. There were people that were aware of their intentions. There were signs. There were opportunities to prevent these attacks and, quite frankly, change the course of not only those that were victims, but also, you know, the lives of these attackers, quite frankly, could have been steered in a different direction.
And so the training that is going to take place as a result of this report. Now, what are educators and law enforcement officers going to be learning from this report? What are some of the warning signs that they should be looking out for, and that frankly we as parents should be looking out for as well?
Yeah, you know, there's several disturbing behaviors. They call it a constellation of behaviors, and it really requires a holistic view of the student and what's going on in the life of that student. What educators and law enforcement and other stakeholders are learning from the Secret Service is, this part is no secret, and this is not new information, but they're learning about a technique called behavioral threat assessment. It's the way the Secret Service protects our elected leaders, like the president. They spend as much effort in prevention doing these threat assessments on potential attackers of the president, let's say, as they do in sort of the physical countermeasures. The director of the Secret Service spoke this morning to the group of about 1,000 of these law enforcement educators and other stakeholders, and he mentioned that he views these preventative techniques like behavioral threat assessment as important as the physical countermeasures that, you know, we've seen and heard about in movies. The way they protect the president, they view those as equally important. And so that's what these law enforcement officers, these school resource officers, these educators and educational administrators and others are learning today. They're learning about behavioral threat assessment. They're learning how to do that process with fidelity. And in the case, you know, of my own daughter's murder in Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, the attacker was the subject of a botched threat assessment.
Yeah.
This was a unfortunate school district, didn't understand threat assessment process, didn't have training in place. The administrators responsible for the threat assessment were unfamiliar with the process, unfamiliar with the tool, the website or software that was supposed to be used, and they didn't complete the threat assessment. And had they done that, you know, I don't know if you and I'd be talking today, to be quite honest, because
right.
I don't think Marjorie Stoneman Douglas would have happened.
You know, and that, Ryan, it is heartbreaking to hear you say that, because again, you know, we can have these tools, but if they're not used, and if the warning signs go ignored, then it really doesn't matter how much data we might have if that information is never acted on.
The consequences are disastrous. They have been certainly for me and for my family. They've been for our community. But again, you know, these threat assessments are where we learn, you know, the focus right now on the gun control side of argument of school safety has been about, you know, background checks, right? Background checks do no good if you don't understand, if you haven't done the work ahead of time to understand what's going on in this attacker's life and whether or not they've committed a crime. And if they have committed a crime, to put them through the criminal justice process so they have a record, so a background check might be effective. None of that matters. None of that will have any impact if you haven't taken the steps earlier to do prevention. And if you can't prevent the attack, then you got to get these attackers into the criminal justice system where they have a record and they're not eligible to purchase a weapon and carry out their attack.
How big a sea change do you think it is going to be for school districts around the country to fully adopt and buy in to these strategies suggested by this new report?
I don't think they have a choice. I think, you know, the lesson I learned with the murder of my daughter Elena was that it can happen anywhere. Never would have imagined that it would happen in Parkland. And the 41 incidents that the Secret Service is talking about today, each and every one of those schools and those communities thought the same thing. That can't happen here. That happened somewhere else. And so those responsible for the safety and security of our nation's schools and our children and the staff and teachers at those schools need to take this responsibility. I hope we see a change. It cannot be the same old focus on firearms that we see, you know, in this never-ending debate that we seem to have after every one of these tragedies. I hope that Parkland is different. I hope that what happens and the advocacy that many of the parents have taken is a different path. It's one where we focus on prevention. It's one where we focus on other ways of preventing these school and public, and quite frankly, public space attacks that does not restrict the freedoms and rights of those of law-abiding citizens, but actually focuses on the real problem and works on prevention.
I mean, honestly, Ryan, it sounds like that not only is the constitutional thing to do, but it is the most effective thing to do rather than try to ban our way to safety and you know, pass all of these gun control measures to actually deal with those specific individuals, the relatively few individuals that they are, but to identify and to address those individuals and their behavior, that seems like it is, you know, far more effective than passing a quote unquote universal background check measure and expecting that's going to stop perhaps a juvenile, even from, you know, illicitly obtaining firearms.
I guess the irony for some, Cam, is that, and you said it a moment ago, look, we can protect our freedoms. We can protect the freedoms that are recognized, our God-given freedoms that are recognized in the Constitution. We can protect those and keep our society safe. This report, I'm excited because I think this has the recommendations and data that support that. And I think we have to take a fresh approach and a different path than we have in these previous tragedies. And I think we can respect our rights, and I think we can keep people safe.
Talking again with Ryan Petty. And Ryan, you're going to be hitting the road and going out and helping take part in this training over the next few days?
We are, over the next several weeks, we'll be in Chicago, Los Angeles, and Miami for two-day trainings along with the Secret Service and helping them promote the research that they've done and the recommendations that they've put forward. Again, I think all of it, I'm excited. I'm appreciative of the work that the Secret Service does. I appreciate the approach they take to proactive prevention measures to keep our elected leaders safe, and I think if we'll just listen to them, we can keep our nation's schools safe. We can keep our nation's public spaces safe also.
Well, God bless you for what you're doing, Ryan. When you get back home in a few weeks, I'd love to talk with you again and you know, maybe talk more about how these training sessions went around the country, if you've got time.
I'd love to.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, sir. And again, thanks for being on the program today. Thank you for everything that you're doing to help protect our schools and our communities, and we look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Thank you, Cam.
I do appreciate Ryan joining us today, and I'm looking forward to talking with him here in a couple of weeks when he gets back home. But, you know, again, just to reiterate a couple of things that he said that I think are really, really important. You can't just try to ban the guns, because it's not just firearms that are being used in these attacks, right? That's the first thing. You have to have a response there on campus. You can't wait for officers to arrive from off campus, because it'll be too late. And you can identify, and you can actually help and deal with those individuals who do pose an actual threat. Those individuals can be identified. Frankly, there are going to be people who will be identified not even as a threat, who also are going to need some help. And hopefully those assessments can provide those resources and the opportunities to reach out and engage with those individuals before they actually pose a threat to human life. Michael Bloomberg certainly poses a threat to the right to keep and bear arms, and it looks like he is getting a little bit closer to a formal declaration of running for president. Today is the deadline to file for the Democratic primary in Alabama in 2020, and indications are that Michael Bloomberg will, in fact, file the paperwork to be on the ballot as a candidate in the Alabama primary. I know, I'm trying to imagine how many people will vote for Michael Bloomberg in the Alabama Democratic primary. Can't imagine it's going to be too many. And this does not mean, by the way, that Michael Bloomberg has formally launched a presidential campaign. He is not. But if you're thinking about it, you've got these deadlines that are coming up here. And so you might as well pay the filing fee. You might as well put yourself out there, even if you have not formally launched a presidential run. Bloomberg has said that if Joe Biden stumbles, that he felt like he would be the one to step in and provide an alternative to Elizabeth Warren, to Bernie Sanders, to the more socialist wing of the Democrat Party. I still think ultimately Michael Bloomberg decides not to get in unless his ego just gets in the way of his common sense and he says, I'm the one to do this. I alone can win the election. Then I guess all bets are off. But I just honestly, I don't see a big space for Michael Bloomberg in the Democratic primary. If Joe Biden is in fact stumbling, And Michael Bloomberg thinks that that leaves room for a quote-unquote moderate voice, because he actually believes that he's a moderate voice. I don't see it. It seems to me that Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, that's where the energy in the base is right now. So Michael Bloomberg coming in, sure, he's got his anti-gun bona fides, but so what? Every candidate running for president as a Democrat is anti-gun. Michael Bloomberg's the one leading a gun control group, but every one of them is anti-gun. There is no pro-gun candidate there, so Michael Bloomberg doesn't stand out, even as head of Every Town for Gun Safety and the backer behind Moms Demand Action. That doesn't necessarily bring him a lot of new support among the base of Democrats. He's also a guy that's in favor of stop and frisk, other policies that are squarely outside the mainstream of Democrat thought. Plus, he's a billionaire, and that's problematic when you've got candidates like Warren out there talking about a wealth tax. Now, this might be, I think, the reason why Bloomberg is getting in, not because of gun control, but because of the socialistic policies of Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. But again, I don't see how Michael Bloomberg has really any chance of success. I would prefer it, honestly, if he ran for president and wasted some of his money, trying to win the White House for himself rather than spending hundreds of millions of dollars on anti-gun candidates around the country. Unfortunately, with a fortune of $52 billion, Bloomberg could probably do both. He can spend $1 billion in his presidential campaign. He could spend $1 billion on anti-gun candidates down ticket. And you know what? He'd still have $50 billion in the bank. So we shall see what happens. But it looks like Bloomberg is getting one step closer towards a presidential run. All right, let's get to today's Armed Citizen story, our recidivist report, our good deed of the day. We'll start with our recidivist report. A continued series in Nashville, Tennessee that's worth paying attention to. I actually talked about this last week. It's a series called Broken. And it is looking at the juvenile justice system and the failures of the juvenile justice system there in the state of Tennessee. This is the latest headline from WSVM News Channel 5 in Nashville. Even juvenile homicide suspects still on the streets getting guns. What they are finding is that juveniles who have been charged with things like murder are, in fact, getting a slap on the wrist. They're put right back out on the streets. They're not being held and bound over for trial. One case that they mention, 16-year-old Myesha Brown, who was arrested in September of 2017 for handgun possession. A week later, News Channel 5 says the charge was retired and she was released on intensive gang probation. 6 weeks later, police say she shot and killed Ruxin Wang. One police officer said, with a youth being arrested for firearms, we know that there needs to be a consequence to that. A lieutenant with an anti-gang task force there in Nashville said that juveniles should face at least 30 days in detention if caught with a gun. Juvenile court judge Sheila Calloway says, no, because they're not going to learn their lesson. That's not how teen brains work. She said, quote, youth aren't making good decisions because their brains are not fully developed. They're getting their hands on deadly weapons and they're not putting it together what they can do with that. We've got to get them into services to make sure that they understand the seriousness of what it means for them to possess guns. Well, again, if part of that seriousness is not time behind bars for violating the law, what seriousness are we talking about here? Because, you know, look, I think I was a fairly average teenager. My kids are fairly average teenagers. Your kids are probably average teenagers. Most teenagers are not running around with illegally acquired firearms, shooting and killing other people. Most teenagers are not doing that. So the idea that we can blame this behavior simply that, well, their brains just aren't fully formed, I say BS. Because if that really were the case, it seems to me like we'd have a lot more teenagers out there and young adults who are committing these acts of violence. We don't. We have a very small subsection of, let's say, 18 to 24-year-olds who are engaged in these types of criminal activities. Now, News Channel 5 asked the judge, why not put out the word that if you get caught with a gun, you'll do 30 days detention? She said, quote, first and foremost, we do not do detention as a sentence. That's part of the state law. Okay. She says, I definitely believe each child has to be reviewed individually. I do believe that as well. But I also think that when you're dealing with those individuals, as individuals, we still have to talk about consequences for actions. One thing that former juvenile prosecutor noted is that when you're, let's say, 14 years old and you're caught in illegal possession of a handgun, that's treated as a misdemeanor offense. It's not a felony offense. And he said that transferring a repeat offender to adult court doesn't work. He said, quote, if a juvenile court wanted to transfer a kid for possession of a handgun, they couldn't. It's a misdemeanor. You're going to transfer a kid from the juvenile system to the adult court where he gets 11 months, 29 days probation. So it doesn't make any sense. Okay. News Channel 5 wondered, does that suggest that the system doesn't treat handgun possession as seriously as it should? Judge Calloway said, in some ways. She says, I do think the system doesn't treat handgun possession as seriously as it should for juveniles. They give another example. Devian Jordan, first charged with handgun possession when he was 15, spent almost a month in detention, released on probation. Less than a year later, he's arrested for carrying a gun to a local high school, spent another month in detention, was released to intensive gang probation. 2 months later, age 16, he got another handgun possession charge. He was sent to the State Department of Children's Services, and then a year later, when he was 17, he was charged with murder. And as News Channel 5 points out, even once individuals have been charged with murder, they're still getting back out on the streets. 14-year-old Mario Woodard, arrested in May of 2017 for his role in a homicide, pleaded guilty to a lesser crime, sent to Department of Children's Services, returned home in October of 2018, so about a year and a half later. In January of 2019, he was busted again for handgun possession, sent back to Department of Children's Services. 2 months later, back on the streets, arrested again, this time for auto theft and handgun possession. Again, we see these types of crimes that don't lead to any consequence whatsoever. And it doesn't lead to any rehabilitation whatsoever either. Judge Calloway says, well, we're not about, you know, punitive measures in the juvenile justice system. Okay. If you're not about punitive measures, then you're about rehabilitative efforts. And if you continue to see these teenagers getting arrested for the same crime of illegally possessing a firearm, guess what? They're not being rehabilitated. And it's failing. And it has to be addressed. So kudos to a News Channel 5 in Nashville for actually covering this story. The entire series is worth checking out, particularly if you live in the Nashville area. But, you know, these types of stories are not indicative and only taking place in Nashville or in Memphis or in Tennessee. Any news station in any city across the country could do the same series if they wanted to. All right, should we get to our armed citizen story? I think we should. From Dover, Delaware, where a 21-year-old who says that she was openly carrying her legally owned firearm ended up defending herself after she was shot at in Dover. It happened over the weekend. Woman said she was in her car, and she noticed a couple of guys. It was about, Sunday morning, about 1 o'clock in the morning. She said that she observed several subjects walking around her vehicle in front of her residence. They then walked away from her car, were standing near another vehicle. She got in her car and began to drive past the subjects when one guy pulled a handgun, fired several rounds, striking her car in the rear passenger side window. The female told police that she open carries a handgun. She returned fire before fleeing in her vehicle. No injuries reported. No shots appear to strike anybody else in the area. Investigation still ongoing. Looks like a case of self-defense. We'll try to follow up with any more details as they become available. And finally today, our good deed of the day from Helena, Alabama, where neighbors and an off-duty officer came to the aid of an individual in distress, Mary Pat Pompu, who's a retired CRNA, heard a knock at her front door. It was a contractor who had been hired to do some work on her home, and his partner was having a heart attack there in their truck. Pompu says his coworker came running over from the truck, banged on my door, said, "Can you call 911? So she did, but then she ran outside as well and began performing CPR on the individual who was not breathing at that point. She said, at that time, my neighbor, Brad Flynn, who's a lieutenant with the Helena Police Department, heard the call on the radio. He happened to be at home. Flynn said, "Oh my God, that's right across my street." So I ran down the driveway. I saw Mary Pat with a gentleman on the ground. I knew immediately I needed to do something to help. Officer Mike Nelson, who was on duty patrolling in the area, he shows up moments later with a CPR mask. Lieutenant Flynn said that, you know, he was happy to be there in the right place at the right time. He normally wouldn't be home that time of day. But he gives all the credit in the world to his neighbor, Mary Pat, says that, quote, "She was a rock star. You can tell that she had the situation well under control." He said, "We worked well together. It was real calm. We knew exactly what needed to be done. We just went into that gear and kept working." The good news is the gentleman who was suffering from cardiac arrest was taken to a local hospital. He is recovering. He did have surgery, but hopefully he is going to be okay and in the right place at the right time and willing and able to do the right thing. Boy, we got a lot of folks there. Mary Pat Pampu. And Lieutenant Brad Flynn with the Helena Police Department, we thank you both for your good deeds. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms. Cam and Company, thank you again for being a part of the program today. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the program as a podcast at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, townhall.com's podcast page. We'll be back Monday. We've got a great interview with Kevin Dixie from No Other Choice Firearms coming up. And, of course, more of the day's top Second Amendment news and information. Don't forget as well, you can upgrade your Bearing Arms experience by becoming a VIP member. Yes, you can just click the link at BearingArms.com to find out more details. We certainly do appreciate your support. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back here soon with the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation here on Bearing Arms, Cam and Company.